Eastern Cargo, Western Cape, and Hogo are yet to build. But they have submitted pieces of information. And then KwaZulu-Natal has an unclear vision, but they've also submitted pieces of information. Now, in 3.1, the committee must consider the negotiated mandates, and the delegates may negotiate as per the parameters of the negotiated mandate and amend the bill to address the constitutional challenges and concerns raised by the public to produce an amended bill for provinces to consider finally. However, that meeting is scheduled for the 12th of February for negotiating mandates. That's the process today. Delegates will have to negotiate on the bill and try and end the bill so that we can produce a final bill for the provinces and legislatures to consider.
That was just a question of the members who will deliberate on the set date. While we are still waiting for the department,
Constitutional Development and the Independent Commission for the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers, The committee must adopt the salary adjustments for magistrates and judges the 2013 and 2014 financial year. We also request that appropriate with magistrates. Members will recall towards the beginning of 2012, magistrates had grievances in terms of they were not getting, they're not happy with the salary structure in terms of the pension benefits as opposed to their salaries. It was at an impasse between themselves and the Independent Remuneration Commission. The committee is requesting an update on how that process has taken place and where magistrates' grievances has been dealt with. In terms of that, in our agenda, we've tabled two letters from JOASA, which is the Judicial Officers Association of South Africa, and AMSA, which is the Association of Regional Magistrates of South Africa. And they requested an invitation to brief the committee on the salary adjustments. And so it's for the committee to decide whether they want to have that meeting with them. Then we're dealing with proclamations as a second agenda item. It's really just proclamations which are published in the government compared to the terrorist activities from the United Nations. They identify people that the committee would need to prove as terrorist entities. Then, going to the 12th, we're dealing with traditional postal negotiating mandate meeting, and that's, we've tried to do that for the whole day, but in the event of dinner, we would have to adjourn for the dinner. Then, the 13th is the present state of the nation address. Tuesday 18th, preparation for traditional court's final mandate meeting, and then the second briefing by the Department of Police for the private sector industry regulation amendment. Wednesday 19th, traditional courts for final mandate meeting. Tuesday 25, and then negotiating mandate meeting on the legal practice bill and the judicial magistrate amendment bill. Wednesday 26th of February, discussion with department heads regarding the implementation of the Double Justice Act. Members will recall we held a meeting in October last year, 2013, and basically there was issues of concern based on the public with regards to the implementation of the Child Justice Act between the departments. There was a big lack of communication between the departments and a lot of the structures weren't in place for what they had quoted. So we would just want to get all the department heads together to iron out these issues before we table the final report. Then March the 4th, progress reports of revision suspended magistrates and also briefing on revision suspended magistrates has been scheduled. And then Wednesday the 5th of March, the final mandate meeting on the legal practice law and judicial magistrates amendment. And then the final meeting will be Tuesday 11th just to wrap up our program here.
And then Chair, on Tuesday 11th, according to my knowledge, I think our first sitting of NCP will be on the 18th of February. We had a program meeting last week, and I left the change. But according to my knowledge, it's for the 18th. And then requests by AMSCO and the Managers Commissions. There's a few clear questions that we still need to answer. I asked them. How far is the issue? I think we can, if it's possible for us, if we have enough time in the afternoon, we can invite them, we can talk to them and get some therapy. That's right, and there's something also that I see that the traditional courts will make a mandate meeting for Wednesday the 12th. It's only from 10 to 1 o'clock. Is that enough time? I just ask, is that enough time since seeing that this is a difficult issue? Do you think we can finish those things, all the provinces, and knowing that four provinces are already said no, but we need to fix their issues and their amendments that they need to do? Do you think 3 hours enough? I'm just asking you. Thank you.
That's the conclusion. Let's say, Honorable Kwesi. Honorable Matila, Honorable Mati. No, thank you, Chair. I'm just saying, in terms of the changes that came in as far as the justice structure, the justice department is concerned, I'm not sure as to whether in accommodating the magistrates, this group that wants to come and talk to us around the accumulation of magistrates, this question. Remember this bill that we passed that talks about making sure that the justice cluster becomes one sector. You don't have the difference between magistrates and whatever, but they are administered in one area. So that the chief justice is in charge of the whole process, so that they are dealing with all those things. I'm not sure as to what is it that you are going to discuss with them, but I don't have a problem with them approaching this. Because I think the point we need to deal with the entire process around the justice system, so that we are able to can move and also do the right things in that. If you take magistrates, some of them are better qualified than advocates. Some of them are better because they have better courses than what advocates go through when they come through and become either magistrates or judges. You know, and remember we have passed the bill that says even magistrates can come through and become judges. You know? And I'm not sure because I'm not sure as to how do we deal with that particular situation of dealing with the magistrate issue, because we have tried to align our entire justice process together. And my question is, if these people who wants to speak on behalf of magistrates come to us, what is it that we're going to deal with?
That's also with them, the issue when they're here.
Yeah, I'm also on the same matter. My concern is that we dealt with the matter, I think in the previous year, if not 2012, when they came to see us and make presentations. And with these matters of remuneration, that there is a precedent from the courts in terms of the judgment. So one would really want to know what is expected of the committee, you know, to look at whatever they present to us, because if it's about influencing whether we adopt or not to adopt the issue, and as you know, this matter was quite a mess with the committee, which when it was presented to us in terms of the remuneration. Of magistrates. One aspect of it was the issue of whether the department is responding in closing the gaps in terms of what the magistrate wanted, whether they are, whether now it's an issue of them not accepting 5% as percent before. So I'm saying, Chair, I'm not sure whether these things are linked, whether they've just wanted us to see it. So in terms of our scheduling of the meeting and the actual objective of the meeting is to give them a hearing on the objection of the 5% across borders for all public office bearers, or is just a matter about the conditions in which work conditions of magistrates more open oversight. It is important that part be clarified, because in terms of what we are supposed to do, whether we are allowed to do representations on this matter. No, this is a matter that I think our legal advisor, the recording advisor, would make an opinion on that one, and Parliament perhaps legal office would have an opinion, so that we don't find ourselves again in a situation where we do this matter. The second matter relates to the deadline, and I'm just say more of an emphasis, Chair, that there has been representations from the legislature about the document, the bill, after negotiating mandates schedule. So once we've set for negotiating mandates, our dates for final mandates must be preceded by a release of the actual amend the bill to provinces, because legally speaking, they want to vote on a bill that is the actual bill, because for them, they can vote on something that might change. In some meeting that the select committee might have. So it is the position of the legislature here that we must have that. So I hope that the secretaries of the committee then would make sure we would be interested to advise us and whatever else is involved, that with these deadlines that we set out, then we are able to find the actual list or what division, as they say, as a police. After the negotiating mandate, she list and the few measures which it was the province prefer to vote on. It's just an emphasis on that one, that really we must, the deadlines must be informed by the ability to produce a few measures on the bill. Thank you, sir.
Okay. No, she just follow up on this message issue. Yes, they were here, 2012. And I think change is not what they represent to us, and that they and we as a committee has acknowledged that the inequality between the legislature and the prosecutors. There's something that we have sent back to the president, and we still need, we're still waiting for their reply as a committee, because we did not take any decision today. We sent something back to the president, and we asked the Office of President to intervene to tell us what's happening. The reason they hold us back was because there was a court case. And we wanted to wait for the outcome of that court case. And we want to hear what the President is saying. On that issue, that's why I want us, because we have, even the committee has a problem. Why is it that prosecutors are getting much more money and benefits than magistrates? We have a problem with that. We didn't speak out our mind, but we had a problem as a committee. So, I'm asking, let us hear what was the verdict from the president's office so that we know exactly what is happening. Because some of us in our constituencies, they follow this committee meetings and they follow through the radio and the TV and what, and they ask us questions in our constituencies. I've been asked many questions from Metro, and I keep on telling them, I'll come back to you when I have an answer with you with the president, because I can't tell them anything until the committee has decided what's the problem, what's forward, how to deal with this problem in the future. So we still win with it. So on that basis, I really want them to come back to us so that we can hear from them. And I think by now, we might have an answer from the president, if it's possible, so that we can decide. Thank you, Chair. Chair, please.
I've just highlighted one thing. That the alignment of the justice.
No, no, not in that. If you are responding to...
I'm not responding. I'm just coming up with an issue here. That, you see, Honorable Gunda is raising key issues. Yeah? We have not had a response to so far. Yeah? Now, if we have the same people coming back to us, yeah? Without answers, it's a problem. It's a problem. Now, I'm saying, there are three things that we need to look at. One is that we must have the response, but the first response we already have, the realignment of the judiciary. That's the first part that we have now, and that we are clear about, the realignment of the judiciary. That's the first area. The second area is we don't know what is there in the judiciary. Now, if they are coming to lobby us around disagreeing with salaries, once we have accepted that the entire public office bearers and every year receives 5%, what is it that we need to discuss further than that? Because we are agreeing with the situation. We agree with the discrepancies that Nehemiah Mafunda is facing. We agree. But how do we address it? We are old. This is how, because of the alignment of the division, this is how we are going to address all these other issues. Until they give us a report, we'll be able to deal with that particular situation. We can't now at this stage. Okay, that's what I wanted to ask.
Honorable Matilda, we don't know what they want to present before the committee.
Let them come and present. If we want to offer any assistance to them, we will tell them that we will not be able to assist them. Honorable members, the item that we were supposed to deal with the briefing about the presentation, we will make it the last item now that the minister is here, and then we also take the opportunity to welcome the minister. And without any waste of time allowing to reach the committee. Over to the minister.
During the interviews, the candidate performed the above average and the competence test compared with the view of the panel. I as a side matter, but I think it's important to mention that the portfolio says that all of us have to abide by the rule of law in the country. That some of the comments which have been made about succession to him, that if somebody listening and not knowing the contents of the discussion would think that in one way or the other the candidate has a record. And as we said, we did everything, record checked everything. We think that this is a stable candidate, especially because what we are faced with currently is that we want police to do their job. At the same time, we have embarked on a process of cleaning up the South African Police Service itself, that the other members of SARS have found themselves on the wrong side of the law. And would want this body to make its presence felt, particularly to those individuals, so that we don't have people who abrogate on themselves powers they don't have. And we think that with Robert McBride as the head of IPT, we'll be able to get to the bottom.
Thank you very much, Mr. Honourable Members. You can give the presentation and anyone who wants for the adoption of the soil. Honourable Matilda and Honourable Kunda. Chair, there's just a minute of Jack.
Let us welcome the South African National Congress the presentation made to us. That's the first point. The second point, Chair, is that if the Minister can clarify what the DA, because they're not happy with any person who comes from the who comes in whatever position, who has been a member of the movement who fought apartheid, who fought all of these other fights, because they want to pay this Mambo bombings precisely at their heart, whilst they understand that that was during a war, and they think the candidate is not suitable, because we have seen it in the media. They bring forward a lot of allegations that are not founded, and when it suits them, whatever allegation that comes against them, they put it underneath a carpet as the DA. When it does not suit them, that candidate becomes a problem because they want the candidate. So I just want all the issues that I was raising in the media, because the media and the DA play the same card. So you clarify the issue and clarify us before we vote on this particular man as to where do you think we are going to and how do you think how suitable this member is, this particular candidate is, in making sure that we change the face of the
Can I cut it short? I don't think it will be proper for the minister to respond to what the media has said. He has made the presentation on the suitability of the candidate on the information that he has presented before the committee.
I think that is what we have to do.
No, I take your point. As I said at some point, you will clarify, but as the African Minister of Commerce, we want to put it forward that we accept the nomination and we want to move with that particular nomination. They know their own members.
Honourable Matilda, let me cut you short. Honourable Munda, and Jack.
Hello, let me also welcome the greeting and presentation by the Minister. Honourable Minister, thank you for clarifying me that it was 49 and 6 were shortlisted. Thank you for that. You are my concern only because this is a very important post. My only concern with this, Honourable Minister, right now is the moral situation of the police and the discipline of the police. And seeing that the advert says is suitable, he is qualified. There's a difference between suitable and qualifications. I like the word that you use, suitable. So, are you satisfied that discipline will really be handled now in the police from the director, from the IFET? Are you satisfied that the morale in morale qualities within the police system will be built up with the appointment of Mr. Lepra? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Minister, Honourable Chair, I'm sorry, but we as a DA cannot support the appointment of Mr. Robert Vestman as Executive Director of the Independent Police Investigative Directorate. We are struggling to build trust in the police. We can refer this to before 1994, out of the apartheid regime. But we will have to stop looking back and starting to build a new country without the stated deployments. This IPID is of utmost importance to stop crime and build trust in the police. It is necessary to build a high standard of moral high. The advertisement for the vote sticks to a predetermined outcome as it was seemingly tailored to Mr. Kaipa's CV. We believe that if the government executes this appointment in the security service, it cannot be done in the political party affiliation. We are in a fight against crime, corruption, and brutality, and will have to fight this appointment up to the highest legal levels. History tells us stories of the big mistakes we have watched the Navy and Sea Ray. Thank you.
I thank the chairperson and thank the minister for the presentation. And chair, I'm supporting the proposal for adoption of the candidates. We are doing so, chair, convinced by what we've read on the CV as well, but we're not privy to the interviews, but the what we see on the CV, and besides personal matters, personal whatever other people are raising on the matters of the fatalities, we see his work in the latest, the last work, which was the Ebro Geni, and chair, we are convinced that the competence that is required to run the institution. So, chair, there is a difference to what this candidate would do. There are strict rules and procedures within the institutions, within the institution on how the people would perform the work. This is a strategic manager position. He's not an investigator. He is not going to be deciding on the deal. He's not having powers to demerit any investigation, which is done by professionals that are employed within the institution. who has, you know, the professional ability and capacity to really bring evidence to the matters. And Chair, we do separate the issues of the morale or in the police, because these are separate entities, Chair, if we all remember. And when we received the presentations from the IPED class, Chair, I think even long before we've been paying oversight for this institution, we know what is required in terms of the management of it, taking forward the issues that we raised as a select committee when we did oversight in the Northern Cape and I think one or two other provinces, which were the issues of administrative capacity for the institution. And this image is strong enough for that capacity. So this is not talking really to the issues of the actual actual individual collection of cases and all this and all that. But we know that at a strategic level, leadership level, we've seen the candidate operating in every place, and therefore, you know, making it fitting for him to perform. So I'm saying, Chair, we're not taking it light for anybody to know our endorsement for the institution is because we've done an assessment beyond, I mean, besides what the panelists and the people who were involved directly in this matter, but our own conviction is that the candidate itself would do the strategic requirements for the institution. And as I said, Chair, before, we do separate the responsibility, I mean, to separate the institution. And it's not only us who do that, it's by law, by the constitution. The institution has separate, they've got different mandates, and therefore, we find what we see the police. There is a disciplinary process and processes within the police itself. There's this one which is called independent, we must highlight that. It's an independent institution which requires a such response that is independent from all other baggages that other people are alleging with the police. Our view is that even the police, the percentages of that allegations and accusations that people are doing, unless they are not in majority, even within the police. So on those basis, I do endorse the proposal for the nomination at the interchange.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to clarify one matter. When the DA 1994 was part of government, they supported commissioners there and gave them dirty money, make sure that corruption is part of the daily police force. That's why we have this, we have inherited that one particular force. Because the DA was part of it with the National Party. Today you have to come and tell us something different. And it's the same DA that is their king. But you go to the Western Cape, today as we speak, they want to hide corruption in the police force that they are running. The same DA that was talking about. That's what they did with Ampela Bagampele. Today they have ditched her. You know, they are the same DA. But we must clear this thing that the DA accepts corruption when they are corrupt. But we don't want corruption. The only organization, the only country in the whole world that this corruption was affiliated with, because we spoke about it. The DA hides nothing. They put it under the carpet. The same DA. They were fishing out this money and put it that it was the police force trying to recruit members of the International Congress. And the very same DA is today coming to us and saying, we are different group. They are not different. They are the same people. Now, because they want They don't want, they think Romans the surprise is going to bring out all the blessings that they do in the police force. They don't want to see him there. Thank you, Jim.
May I respond to this? I'm sorry that the Honorable Matila went to attacking the DA while we're discussing this. I'm trying to say that we must keep this out of politics. It's so important for this country that we do something about the crime and all that. And we can't end it or make it better if you go on and on fighting. I don't know Mr. McBride, I've got nothing against his prisoner, but he's a figure that was always in, but in 6 months, he will do something controversial, and we'll be back here again to talk about it. I'm sorry that you did that.
Can I please allow the minister to respond to, maybe to the clarity that was sought by Honorable Gunda?
Yes, Chair. I think the first comment from the AAC, welcoming the representation, one would want to note that Chair and internal campaign. The second point about the morale of the police and whether we are satisfied that this would help boost the morale. Let me start by saying that we are satisfied that we are going to close the point which is in IPED. The fundamental challenge of IPED today is the lack of strong leadership. And you can't have a body charged with the task of looking at the police. No police anywhere else in the world are a very powerful institution. They're the only institution in society who can stop anybody at any time, search, and even arrest. Now, if you have wrong people in that space, you would be opening up citizens to wrong hands. So that is why it is important to strengthen IP. You need a very strong, courageous leader to face off with this very important and powerful institution in our society. Some few years ago, you as members of parliament have raised issues about IP and the fact that it doesn't have necessary powers. We extended the powers, we amended the IP test. In fact, it was ICD then. We wanted to make sure that there would be no complaints about the capacity. Now, everything is there, tools are there. Members of the portfolio committee, for instance, over a period of time, they raised an issue about now the capacity of IP. To be particular at the hand. So we are convinced, I mean, we have somebody who has been given responsibilities in the past. And we have shown this courage as spirit we want. Because we don't want somebody who will blink when he or she is supposed to take action against wrong elements within the police. So we are convinced on that, very much so. And thanks for your question. The other question from DA, I'm sorry, I didn't check the name. Just remember. Becker, oh yes, Becker, yes, I remember. Yes, in effect. Look, it's not correct that the requirements for this post were predetermined for the nominee. And if I can put it adversely, if for whatever whatever reason that is the case, this is the portfolio committee, including representatives of the DA who sit there, took that decision. Because this came, remember during the FCD time, that one of the requirements was legal. And what has happened now is to strengthen the legal unit within IT. But this time around, the requirement, it was not included. And that's the work of Parliament, really, to grapple with. And there's been no question or complaint about that. Save for last week when we were introducing the candidates. So there's no determining for anything. Neither do we want to say that there is a case that the deployment industry. First, let me just deal with this because it's out there in the media that Robert McBride, a loyal member of the ANC, is a K-DAT employee, and then is not going to do the work he's supposed to do. Robert McBride is not the first candidate or nominee I present to Parliament. 3 years ago, I presented a candidate as nominated by myself as a minister. Very loyal member of the ANC. MP has himself. And there was no such thing as somebody come from the ANC and the cater of the ANC. The member since left the position, resigned from the position. He's representing the ANC currently in Parliament. So there is no logic to say that this one is an ANC, loyal to the ANC, and therefore it's a cater deployment. I can't see any rationale out of that argument, precisely because I had to intervene in our discussion last week to one member of the ANC who was saying, no, well, that happened because the earlier member of the ANC happened to be white. And I said, no, I wouldn't go that far, except that I would still say it's irrational to think that way. These are the people of the ANC, very loyal to the ANC, and the person representing the ANC in Parliament. But there is one thing to want to have somebody who is not ANC and go, because there is no requirement for that. What would not be permissible is when somebody is leaving public office and then work within that public office as party office. That's the only thing which is not. Otherwise, if you say that people should not be ANC, one, it would be discrimination against the ANC, but two, you'll find it very difficult, you know, I mean, 70% of electorates in South Africa or thereabouts are ANC. So where are you going to find these pure un-ANC people and so on? So I'm saying that we really looked into this candidate, and as the member has said, the Honorable Zimande, that critically, the issue of strategic leadership here is important. It's not just fulfilling the qualifications, the suitability, but what leadership are you bringing the strategic level with all the challenges, because yes, we have issues around the morale of the police and so on. But this institution is not there for it. It's there for fairness on behalf of the population to say that police should not abuse their powers. Because if they do abuse their powers, they should know that it is this thing which is going to bring them to their senses. There is this institution which is going to focus particularly on those members, because it can't be correct that people are given responsibility out of trust by society and then abuse the power they have simply because they have power to store stress, and all those things. So that is the major rationale for this opponent. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honourable members, you will remember that it has been a concern for this committee that the agencies in the APET make it impossible for them to perform their functions optimally. And I think if the said candidate has met all the requirements and is fit and proper, we welcome and support the appointment of Mr. McBride to head the APET. This then brings us to the end of the matter that we were dealing with. You are released, the last item, honourable members, is the briefing for say it on Robert and Jack, that you are not against the issue. Say it on Robert and Jack. Say just it on record that you are not against the issue. For tomorrow's meeting, we will have a briefing for the attendant ambassador and the reception. You are released from the Matina.
Thank you, and afternoon, honorable members. Petition under the split the presentation up this afternoon of the document that I'll be speaking to is entitled Private Security Industry Regulation Number 4 and the date for February is referred to as an internal paper. And then the petition document would be the overview of the selected provisions of the CEDA 4. Basically, my document just speaks to the background of the bill and the process as has occurred in the portfolio processes and then holding in on the provision around common ownership and just briefly discussing some of the comments that have occurred around that provision. As you know, due to the immense growth of the private security industry, there were different challenges that presented themselves in this industry. Some of them being the lack of adequate resources which compromise effective regulation, the lack of proper accountability for firearms in the position of members of the private security industry, security services being outside the public by South African security companies and similarity within the private security industry. And as a result of some of these challenges, this presented a need to open up the regulatory framework and among the answers of the arrangement for. In terms of the process in Parliament, the amendment bill then was introduced by the Minister of Police following a comprehensive review of the Private Security Industry Regulation Act 2001 and was an attempt to address some of these shortcomings in the Principal Act. The Portfolio Committee of Police agreed that its deliberations on the bill introduced by the Minister presented an opportunity also to ensure that the Principal Act was aligned with the Constitution and other legislation such as the PSM Act. On the 6th November 2013, the Committee tabled its report on CEDA and presented an amended bill, D27B2012. The report together with the amended bill was considered by the House on the 12th of November, and upon the resolution of the House, the Committee turned to the Committee for permission for the Committee to inquire into amending other provisions. The Committee then met on the 28th of January and passed the law to indicate whether they wish to pursue any further amendments. And that not being the case, and the instance of again allowing for us to deliberate, the committee proceeded with a closed-by-closed discussion and voted on all. The bill was supported by the majority in the committee. Now, Patricia will take honourable members through the most important other pieces that have been presented for amendments, some of those being that the bill provides for additional powers to the minister, to provide a cooperation with the civilian secretariat for peace. And then most importantly, and the clause that received the most attention from the Portfolio Committee on Police was the clause on the limitation of foreign ownership. In the meeting we said before, it was referred to as Section 20, Subsection 2. And it stated the amendment suggested was that the security business may only be registered as a security service provider with the amendment C if at least 51% of the ownership and control is exercised by South African citizens. Below this, I presented general comments that have been made on this particular section. That are those in discussions, particularly in the portfolio of Matrion Police, which members can ponder and think about in terms of the presentation tomorrow and asking further questions in relation to the particular section. Prior to 1998, there was very little foreign ownership of private security companies who were operating in the South African market. However, since 1998, the situation has changed dramatically, and during 2000 alone, foreign companies had invested more than 1.7 billion by private security companies in South Africa. Today, however, we see little, not accurate data based on modern ownership of private security companies in South Africa. Some of the commentators have listed the following as concerns related to this provision. The provision that limits foreign ownership of private security companies and the World Trade Organization general agreement on trade in services gaps are being breached. There was also concern around the expropriation rule that forces private security firms to sell at least 51% of issues to South Africans, and a concern that this thing appears to violate these gaps and their things. And that the intended amendment constituted an arbitrary deprivation of property, which in turn was within Section 25 of the Constitution. However, this clause was amended by the Portfolio Committee on Police. And just like in summary and in conclusion, just to note that the amendment in its current form is not prohibit foreign ownership in the South African private security company. It's rather limited. And in terms of international best practice, in terms of documents, reviewed an international best practice study that I think we will also possibly be presenting tomorrow. One will see that the trend internationally indicates that most countries they either totally prohibit foreign investments or they do in fact restrict foreign participation in these in private security companies.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good afternoon, Honourable Members. I first want to point out that the version of the bill that was adopted by the committee is in fact the D version of the bill. You will note that my document overview of the related provisions of the Private Security Industry Regulation Amendment Bill B-10-10-B-2012, it refers to that bill, and the reason for that is because the D version of the bill is not yet available. Hopefully the department will present that D version with the list of technical corrections. Because what Andrea didn't mention was that when the bill was recommitted to the committee to consider whether it wants to address other provisions in the law and make other amendments, there were no other amendments coming from the committee, but the Department of Police, it had a list of technical corrections which they then affected on the bill and which the committee adopted. That's why the bill that will eventually be referred to the committee will be the D version. I should also just note that the committee adopted this bill and its report on adopted the bill on the 28th and adopted its report on the bill on the 29th. So in terms of the parliamentary process, the bill has not yet come before the National Assembly for adoption. And it's only after that process that the bill then gets formally referred to the committee. So we're actually briefing the committee on the bill that has not yet been formally referred to us, but it will basically come to the committee, and we just wanted to utilize the time that we had to have the committee give us a bit of insight on what the film is about. Now, I don't want to duplicate what Andrea has already discussed, but I'm just trying to briefly hone in on a few important issues that I think will give you a sense of what the film is about. Like Andrea put it out, it is to regulate the private security industry, because up to now, that has not been done. The legislation that is currently in place that covers the sector is outdated. That's why following this broad process, there was lots of consultation and extensive consideration and amendment by the Portfolio Committee and where the members get the ball, which is quite a technical ball. But I do believe that the amendments actually strengthened the legislation in order to govern the sector and in order to regulate the sector effectively. One of the important provisions is the ministerial, it gives more power to the minister with regard to the authority. The private security industry authority is the body that that oversees, one says, the umbrella, but it oversees or regulates what happens in the security industry. Security businesses or businesses that provide security services and register their members with this authority, and they pay registration fees, they pay levies. And these levies and registration fees is where the funding comes from currently for the authority to operate. So the goal then strengthens some of those functions. What the goal does, first of all, if I can just refer you and take you to page 2 of that document that I'm referring to. If I can take you to point C, refers to, in order to achieve the objective of regulating the private security industry, the goal also proposes amendments to certain definitions. For instance, it inserts a definition referring to the Civilian Secretariat of Police, which is not, it's recent legislation where that has now changed, and the Civilian Secretariat of Police is not referred to in the principal act, so it makes reference to it. And what it also does is it puts a directive that says that the Civilian Secretariat of Police must have a working relationship with the council. And the council is also a body that the board establishes, which is actually the governing authority of the CIRA, the authority of the CIRA. So this is the council is then governs and oversees the affair of the authority, and this council must now account to the Minister of Police. So the board then check out what exactly is expected from the council, how they must conduct their affairs, and also set out exactly in terms of the accounting and the bookkeeping records and other information that it must keep. It must comply with the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act. David, what Stephen says, it also assigns additional powers to the minister, and the goal defines this as the cabinet minister responsible for policing. And these powers include ministerial supervision of the authority in the event that the authority or the council cannot or does not comply with the legislative requirements in performance of its functions. So basically the minister can intervene, and later on in the document I really just break down what exactly the minister can do in the event that he does intervene when that situation happens. So if I can then go to section 3, which gives you an overview of the selected provisions in the law. Establishment of the council, as I mentioned, is to govern and control the authority, and all the acts of the council are regarded as acts of the authority. The law provides that the minister can mediate in the event of a dispute between the council and its members. I think here is perhaps one area where the committee can ask the department to give more clarity, because it doesn't really, the law doesn't really set out what would constitute a dispute between the council and its members. So that's a bit of why. And to continue, it also provides for the involvement of the civilian secretariat in the council. And here the idea is that there must be a working relationship for the council and the civilian secretariat to cooperate on matters concerning policy and policing in the private security industry. And then briefly just to look at the function of the council, as I mentioned, it is the accounting authority of the CNA and it's accountable to the minister. It must provide quarterly reporting information, and I think this in our deliberations, especially with departments, we've noticed that when you look at their quarterly spending and performance, it's very important to get an idea of how that entity is performing. And I think this is a very welcome provision in the Act, since they must provide quarterly information to the minister about their functions and certain compulsory information. What a bill does is set out certain records that must be kept by the authority, which includes firearms, as Anthony mentioned before. They must say how many security officers there are that are registered with authority. They must say how many firearms they have in the position, how many have been lost, how many have been stolen, how many have been destroyed. They must report incidents relating to the discharge of a firearm by a security officer that may have led to the death or injury of a person. So the minister must get a report on all of these information on a quarterly basis. And then, as I mentioned, the authorities' finances must be kept in line with the Bishop of the Public Finance Management Act, and the financial statements and reporting information must be submitted to the minister. And the minister must table the annual reports and the financial statements in Parliament. And then I think one of the important provisions of the bill is the appointment of a director and the deputy directors, which must be done in consultation with the minister. So this is also where the powers of the minister is expanded by his involvement when a director and a deputy director is appointed. Now, the director is the person who runs the day-to-day affairs of the party, the staffing and all those issues, and he must ensure that the proper accounting practices are followed, and that the fire security in the city, this act prescripts are also adhered to. And this director must then report to the council as the accounting authority, and the council then adds in turn report to the minister. The committees, the council must establish committees from within the industry to advise on certain things. This could be, for instance, regarding development in the sector that might need amendments to legislation or maybe regulations. The council must meet at least once every quarter, and it must take steps to achieve the object of the authority and ensure that the authority performs its duties. The council can make rules to manage its affairs, and when it does so, it must publish a notice in the Government Gazette. But the law also provides for the council to have secretariat to see that its admin is taken care of. And then one of the important provisions of the law is that the council can assign any of its functions or delegate any of its powers except the power to make rules. So that's the only power that it cannot delegate. And then the document in further briefly describes the composition. I think the important thing about the composition is that the councillors, there's a chairperson, a vice chairperson, and there's three other members. They are appointed for a term of 5 years. So that is contained in the new law. And if a councillor is absent for 3 consecutive meetings, the minister must be informed before the next meeting. Or if he or she becomes disqualified for any reason, the minister can then appoint someone to fill that vacancy for the remainder of the term of that person. And then, as I said, the bill make provision for the minister to supervise the authority for certain reports to be submitted to him. And then, in the event, as I mentioned before, if the council or the authority does not perform or does not fulfill its duties in terms of the legislation, the minister can then direct the council or the authority to take certain steps to remedy the situation. He can take over some of the functions or the responsibility. It can prevent the council or the authority from taking any action that is prejudicial to the objects of the authority. It can dissolve the council or appoint a new council. The minister himself can also take corrective measures as required, and can appoint any member, he can appoint interim person to take any member of the council if that becomes necessary. And he can also suspend remove from office any member of the council. One of the other important provisions, my second last point is the Act makes provisions for that security businesses and security service providers must be registered with the authority. But it also provides for exemptions. And what it does is that a person or a business can then make a written application to the minister to apply for such extension. Now, the Act also establishes an extension advisory committee to make recommendations to the minister in this regard. So, the minister then makes a decision which he must then give within 90 days from receipt of that application for extension. And the reasons, if it is refused, he must provide those reasons within 30 days of a person writing and asking why his extension application was refused. And then finally, as I mentioned before, the authority gets income from the registration fees and levies from the service security providers and their businesses. But then there's one provision that I think the committee could benefit from further clarity from the department, and that is that the bill also provides funds can be appropriated by Parliament where appropriate and justified. And it is not clear where this provision fits in, because it refers to a private security industry and it's not a public body in that sense. So the department should perhaps give us a bit some more information on where this provision fits in and under what circumstances money should be appropriated from government. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Patricia. Honourable members, that was just a preparatory briefing for tomorrow's presentation from the Department of Police. This brings us to the end of the meeting. The meeting session until tomorrow at 2 o'clock.